Oh shit, someone has ice cream. The ice cream man is somewhere. I can hear it. Don't no one lie. Who's getting me an ice cream cone? Come on.
Just dude, if you want an ice cream cone from our ice cream man, who is nowhere in sight, if you want an ice cream cone from our ice cream man, you're asking me to go up to a plain brown van and peer inside, which I'm not gonna do.
Is that the ice cream and puppies van, or is this just the?
It actually there is a sign that says ice cream on the side in yellow paint.
Is it misspelled at all?
No, but it's like it took them way too much time to make that sign that said ice cream.
good ice cream only comes from shady fans. It's the risk involved that makes it extra tasty.
Makes the chocolate so much richer.
Yeah, I could have been abducted, but nope. Instead, I really did get chocolate.
Oh, yes. That's what I'm talking about. Spider-Man spins, Spider-Man wins every time. Helping the good, waging the war against crime. Shooting is where we can bound. On to the roof or to the ground. Spidey has friends, friends who will come to his aid. Firestar flies, Iceman glides, never afraid. Together they go, seeking the evil one, fighting the foe, fighting till they have won.
And welcome to the Mild Mannered Podcast. I'm Mild Mannered Photographer, Alex Erty.
I'm Mild Mannered Thespian, Mike Gilbert.
And I am Mild Mannered Man on the Street, Sam Riedel.
And I'm Mild Mannered Comic Creator, David Gallagher.
And it's a special guest for the 10th episode.
What? What?
We did it. We got a guest. Hey. We got an awesome guest, too, because David Gallagher writes the comic High Moon. Zooty comic.
And we all welcome him.
Yeah, thank you for coming, David.
Thank you guys very much for inviting me. It's very sweet.
Yeah. It's a great comic. And honestly, any comic that has Old West, historical Old West, and werewolves is awesome. And everyone should check it out, first of all. ZootyComics.com. High Moon.
Yeah, and thank you so much.
Yeah.
All those words are very kind. But, and I'm very excited to be here on a podcast. I feel it's like this posse of...
Oh, yeah. We've never been called a posse before, guys.
Well, Alex had stopped by the table to see Steve Ellis and I at New York Comic Con, and we actually drew his face on a wanted poster.
Yeah, so I am actually wanted by DC.
How much?
In the town of D.C., I think it was for $1,000.
Dead or alive?
Yeah.
Yeah, dead or alive. Yeah, both. Alex is a zombie. Yeah. He's the dead alive.
Yeah. Hopefully, you know, when DC does do their zombies version, their zombies phase, I will be starring in that somehow.
Yeah.
Alex will also be appearing in Blackest Night.
Yes.
Hear that.
All right.
Whoa. Is he Firestorm?
I think I am.
I'm not at liberty to say.
We can't actually say it because I'm supposed to be mild-mannered. I'm just a lowly photographer.
Well, you know, actually, and this is totally off-topic.
Sure.
But do you guys watch Smallville?
I actually haven't. I've been told I should.
I have.
Right. I've seen one episode. I don't know.
I watched Smallville.
Okay, well, all right, so I've watched Smallville. I'm not afraid to admit it. I've watched it since day one, which I think was like September 19th, 2001. But that's not the point. The point is in the last season, mm-hmm. you guys may have heard, Doomsday was in it.
Yes.
Right? Did you guys hear that? Yes.
That's the first time he's going to be in live action.
Right, which was kind of cool. I was like, wow, Doomsday's here. It's kind of cool. And I'm totally going to spoil this for people, and I'm sorry. But I'm reminded of this because of Alex. In the show, they kill Jimmy Olsen.
What?
They kill Jimmy Olsen.
I remember that, yes.
And I'm reminded of this because Alex was Jimmy Olsen at the New York Comic Con. And I thought
maybe you warned me I was going to die?
Nobody tells me these things. I was just surprised as you were.
Okay. Alex, don't you? There would have been a paradox.
It would, I guess, it would have. Yeah, it would have created. It would have splintered off the future.
Yep. Right. Also, now he can return as a Black Lantern.
Exactly, and I think honestly, I would definitely at least I can be a Lantern somehow.
Black or other way.
That's one way.
Yeah.
There's a website that I frequent called the Fush, and they actually have a Brown Lantern logo. With that is in the shape of a little toilet bowl.
Oh,
and
that's
so I think, you know, like if the Red Lanterns are full of anger, then I guess the Brown Lanterns are full of crap.
They had a lot of fiber.
Yeah.
That made my night, thank you.
Yeah.
In Brannest day and Brannest night. Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah. Speaking of awesome, let's get on to the releases for the week quickly and talk about our picks. And I know, David, you said you didn't actually buy anything this week. I think, actually, we'll talk about what you do because I think you've kind of brought it out when you go to Comic Book Club. You're kind of what you do when you, during the Comic Week. And I think it's interesting. And as a show that's sort of about, like, not spending $50 a week, it's definitely a good habit to be in. So at the end, when we do our picks, I think you should definitely talk about what your method is.
Okay, absolutely.
Yeah, so starting off, for the week of June 24th, 2009, we have JLA Deluxe Edition Hardcover Volume 2 from DC Comics, $29.99.
Empowered Trade Paperback Volume 5 from Dark Horse, $14.95.
Green Lantern Tales of the Sinestro Corps Trade Paperback, DC Comics, $14.99.
Immortal Iron Fist Fraction Brubaker Aja Omnibus Hardcover Marvel Comics, $74.99.
Ultimates Omnibus by Mark Millar and Brian Hitch Hardcover by Marvel Comics, $99.99.
All-Star Batman and Robin, The Boy Wonder Trade Paperback, Volume 1, DC, $19.99.
Immortal Iron Fist Trade Paperback, Volume 4, Mortal Iron Fist, Marvel Comics, $14.99. I just realized that's a very odd thing to read.
Patsy Walker Hellcat Trade Paperback, Marvel Comics,
$16.99. Patsy. Thor Visionaries, Walt Simonson, Trade Paperback, Volume 3, New Printing. Marvel, $29.99.
Witchblade, Trade Paperback, Volume 6, Image, $14.99.
Gantz, Trade Paperback, Volume 5, from Dark Horse, $12.95.
G.I. Joe, Trade Paperback, Volume 1, Indie, $19.99.
G.I. Joe! Sorry.
Superman.
Go!
Superman, Tales from the Phantom Zone, Trade Paperback, DC Comics, $19.99.
Essential Doctor Strange, trade paperback volume 4 from Marvel Comics, 1999.
I like how you said that in the pseudo-British Doctor Strange accent.
Oh, thank you. I love Doctor Strange. And I don't want him to talk like this when I see him in a movie.
Who would win, Doctor Strange or Doctor Who in a fight?
Oh, Doctor Who?
Yeah, I think so.
But Doctor Doom would be both of them.
Yeah, he would. He probably would.
There should be a medical comic drama starring Doctor Strange, Doctor Who, and Doctor Doom just in a some random hospital in space.
And Doctor Druid.
And Doctor Druid, yes. And Doctor Drew from The Love Line as well.
Oh, that'd be brilliant.
I'd watch that.
I'd read that.
I would watch the shit out of it.
And Nurse Betty.
Nurse Betty.
Can we have some Night Nurse in there?
Yes. Oh, Night Nurse too. Yes. Done. Sold.
Nice. Okay.
We have
you're up, Sam.
Nick's Wannabe Premium Hardcover. Premier Hardcover. Ah, I did it again.
Okay. No big deal.
$4.99.
Acronyms 1, Sam 0.
X-Men Spider-Man Hardcover. Marvel Comics 1999.
Fallen Sun Death of Captain America Hardcover. Marvel Comics, $29.99. I heard he's coming back.
Yeah.
Whoa.
What?
No, I'm kidding. Go ahead.
Yeah. Indiana Jones trade paperback, volume 1, Tomb of Gods. Dark Horse Comics, $14.95.
I hear that's where Captain America is.
In the Tomb of Gods?
Yeah. Indiana Jones is he's totally gonna raid him.
And if that actually happened, if like Indiana Jones brought back Captain America, I would actually approve of Resurrection. I think that's the only way now.
Yeah. Turok.
Wait, is it? Okay, keep going.
Yeah, Turok, Son of Stone Archives, Hardcover Volume 2, Dark Horse Comics, $49.95.
Awesome 2, trade paperback, awesomer, Indie Comics, $14.95.
I guess that's the only way you can one-up yourself.
Yeah.
When your comic's name is awesome.
Well, I guess the third one would be Awesomest.
True.
Yeah. He's probably planning that.
And then where do you go from that, though?
The Awesomest.
I think he might himself into a corner.
They will, I mean. But for now, Sam?
The Ancient Book of Sex and Science hardcover. Indie, 1995.
Gonna buy that. Dark Reign, Accept Change, trade paperback, Marvel Comics, $24.99. 99 cents a change, so accept that.
Marvel Masterworks Fantastic Four, trade paperback, volume 2, variant edition, Marvel Comics, $24.99.
Venom trade paperback, Dark Origin, Marvel, $14.99.
Jim Butcher's Dresden Files, Stormfront Picks. Hardcover, Volume 1, Indie, $22.95.
I'll skip the next one. Golden Age Starman, Archives, Hardcover, Volume 2, DC Comics, $59.99. That's a lot of Starman.
Jerry Anderson, TV, 21, Adventures in the 21st Century, trade paperback, Volume 1.
And Volume 2.
And Volume 2, for that matter. Both Indie, $29.99.
Huh.
Tarot Witch of the Black Rose, trade paperback, volume 7, Indie, $24.99.
Powers, trade paperback, volume 5, Anarchy, new printing, Image Comics, $14.99.
So if you missed that, pick it up.
What'd I miss?
City of Dust, trade paperback, volume 1, Indie, $14.95.
We got G.I. Joe, movie adaption, trade paperback, and the prequel as well, just to kind of save some time. Both are $17.99.
Goat's Infinite Typewriters, trade paperback volume 1 from Indie, $14. Hmm. That's interesting. That's an interesting title.
Grim Fairy Tales, trade paperback, volume 6, Indie, $15.99.
Pebbles, hardcover, book 1, Pebbles Conquers Camp, and hardcover, book 2, Daddy's Girl. Both are $15.99.
Rex Libris, trade paperback, volume 2, Book of Monsters. from Indie Comics, 1795.
Sherlock Holmes Cases, Twisted Minds, trade paperback, Indie, 1499.
Sir, Propos of Nothing, hardcover, volume 1, Indie, 2499.
Tezuka's Blackjack, trade paperback, volume 5, from Indie Comics, 1695.
Treasury 20th Century Murder Hardcover, Volume 2, Amos Players.
Zorro. Oh, sorry. Finish that. Sorry.
There was some premature Zorro there.
Yeah. Premature Zorro all over the place. Okay, so that's $15.95. Sorry, Sam. Zorro, Year 1, Hardcover, Volume 1, Trail of the Fox, signed cover. Indie, $69.99. All right, that's all for the releases of this week. Sorry about that. That took a while.
That's a lot of trades for 1 week. Wow, that's the most I've seen in a while.
So it's good that we're picking our we have certain picks of the week as well. So let's go through that quickly. Dave, feel free to chime in as much as you want when we talk about certain trades. So let's start. Who wants to go first?
I guess I'll go first. I mean, mine are at the top.
Yeah, so let's go first then with Mike.
All right, my first pick of the week is All-Star Batman and Robin, The Boy Wonder, trade paperback volume 1, which is written by Frank Miller and art and cover art by Jim Lee and Scott Williams. I mean, since I was like 5 or 6, I've been a fan of Batman, and I've loved some Batman comics, and I've hated some Batman comics, but, I mean, Frank Miller has a lot to his name and has a reputation of producing really solid stuff. So, combined with the artwork by Jim Lee and Scott Williams, I am looking forward to see how this turns out. Because it's like bringing Batman back to his glory days, I guess.
Have you read any All-Star?
I have not had a chance to read it myself. David, have you? David? Whatever. Okay. So, you're excited about that? I can understand. I mean, I expect you to pick this up soon, or at least... rent it if you can.
Well, I could probably try. I mean, it's $20 for 240 pages. It's really not bad at all.
Yeah, it's pretty good. 9 issues. So I mean,
one of the big problems with the trade itself, or the series itself, rather. Sorry, was that it was so late all the time. So getting it all together is a better deal, I guess. The story I've read All-Star. It's quite strange, but it's definitely Frank Miller's Batman. It's Which not the good. Batman that you know and love, probably, but it's definitely Frank Miller's Batman.
Well, I've read some of Frank Miller's idea of Batman, so I hope I won't be too surprised.
Not too surprised.
It's filled with love. Batman starts hugging Robin. Everybody, he smiles. He gives flowers to little girls. It's the sweetest story ever.
It's actually Day-Glow Orange.
And Frank Miller comes out to kiss a kitten.
Yeah, oh, man, that was the sweetest scene.
Yeah. The letters pages are all in pink as well, aren't they?
Rainbows and flowers. It's really, I mean,
it's a classic Frank Miller you know and love.
Right. Yep.
And actually, if you... There's a petition going around that Frank Miller started. If 1 million people buy this trade paperback, he will buy 100 little girls unicorns.
Oh.
Of their very.
That's a nice offer from Frank Miller. Have you had a chance to read this All-Star Batman, David?
Yeah, I enjoy it for the sweetness that it contains.
That's good to know. So pick up this trade if you want, if you're interested at all in Batman and sweetness and kittens.
And Frank Miller.
And love. And love.
And love.
In fact, if you don't buy the trade, you don't love love.
Oh. That's a shame there.
And you make Batman sad when you don't love love.
Yeah. You make him a sad panda.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So what was your other pick, Mike?
My other pick, I mean... This one I probably won't buy, but I'm going to talk about because I've read both of the parts. I've read Well, this my pick was the Ultimates Omnibus by Mark Millar and Brian Hitch. The only reason I picked this is because it's only Ultimates 1 and 2, and it's not Ultimates 3, which with all due respect to Jeff Loeb, I did not really like at all. And I actually liked what Mark Millar did with the storyline of the Ultimates, which is, you know, the ultimate version of the Avengers, who I also have read a lot of. And I would recommend this story to people, and it saves you a lot of trouble of trying to buy three or four trades to get them all together.
See, but I'm going to actually have to disagree with you, because I saw this, and it is a great, like, it's, like, you know, both kind of Ultimates, like, seasons, you know, 1 and 2. And then you have the Ultimates Annual 1 and Ultimates, you know, Annual 2, but...
Well, I'm also I'm also crazy about sketching, so I also saw the variant sketch edition, which also attracted my attention. But...
Okay, but I mean,
I understand like why you wouldn't pick it because it is a really hefty price. Whereas the only reason I'd ever get this is A, if I got a lot of money, and B, I really wanted to collect it.
Yeah.
Like as I said, I probably won't buy this, but I'm just going to talk about it because I enjoyed the writing and I enjoyed the artwork and everything behind it.
I just feel like it's one of those things where it's just, you can buy both Ultimates 1 and Ultimates 2
via small trades.
Covers. Actually, not even the small trades. You can buy the hardcovers for much less than you can for this omnibus. Like, I think they're only $30 each. So that's $60 all, you know, for both Ultimates 1 and 2 without the annuals.
Which is what I'm saying. If you had the money and you were a big collector of the comic books, which is why you'd probably buy this.
Yeah, if you really like this comic. Okay. Yeah.
If you really like the comic and you have the money to spend.
I'm kind of in Mike's boat on that one.
This is
one of the few comics by Mark Millar that I can say that I really, really enjoyed.
Oh, I love it too. I have both of the hardcovers, but it's like also as someone who has tried to read a couple of the big omnibuses in bed, it is not an easy book to read, and it kind of hurts.
Well, reading any omnibus in bed would probably give you a headache.
Well, it also hurts your chest.
Wait. Who says it would give you a headache? It might give you another kind of ache.
Yeah.
Oh, Wasp. Oh, Janet Pym, you're so attractive.
Yeah, well, yeah. Seriously.
Every time she shrinks, she's naked.
I know. And Brian Hitch does draw really attractive women.
Yeah, he does a good job of actually making realistic-looking women.
Realistic, attractive women.
Not like some comics that go over the top with the breast physics.
Well, I don't want to get into too much detail, but, you know, it's not just women's breast physics that defy gravity.
I think we talked about this before, didn't we? Like Captain America?
Well, ultimately, at the end of the day...
Yeah.
And this is total diversion. But at the end of the day, you have comics that represent the ideal physical form. You certainly have... I don't know a single guy who looks like Superman, Captain America, Batman, Spider-Man, yada, yada, yada.
No one.
I know very few women that look like Ms. Marvel, Wasp, Invisible Woman, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I don't know a lot of guys that look like Fabio posing on the front of Harlequin romance novels.
Yeah.
You know, people might complain, oh, how are their boobs so big? You know, why is it that women in comics, you know, have blah, blah, blah?
Yeah, but then you have romance novels.
I don't know. Why do all the men on romance novels, why aren't they wearing shirts?
Exactly.
Yeah.
I think men are a lot of questions more to be often answered than they are.
There's a lot of questions to be answered.
I know. I think two can play that game.
Yeah, exactly. We can throw it right back at the ladies.
That's right. Or the guys.
Yeah, but actually, it might not have been you, I guess, because I remember talking with some people like after Comic Club Live one night, and someone mentioned the fact that there is a art by Rob Liefeld of Captain America where he basically gave Captain America boobs.
Oh, yes.
That's true. Breasts.
Yeah.
Biggest in existence.
It's like the oddest kind of image to sort of see, and it's very frightening.
I've seen it. I'm okay with that.
You're okay with that? Okay.
Only because Rob Liefeld, I like to think of him as an abstract artist.
That explains that basically explains the 70s and 80s then.
Yeah, I mean, in the simplest form, in just to make it really simple, I can't look at Rob Liefeld's art and not get excited. I mean that in the most interesting way. Rob Liefeld makes characters jump, leap, move, bound over things. They do crazy, crazy ass shit.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I would rather read a comic like that than a comic with Superman talking to a priest in a church for six pages.
Yeah.
What series is that?
I understand that. That's that's Superman Confessions, parts 1-6.
Oh, okay. That does not sound like a great comic. Did we drop someone?
Did we?
Because he's awesome.
Yeah, Rob Liefeld is actually good. And
let's start from there. Rob Liefeld is awesome.
Let's explain to people that this is actually a day later now that we're recording this. So some things have happened. We have more energy now. It's not as late in the night. I have a new iPhone now. And
that's why it didn't work. Yeah. Alex didn't have a new iPhone. That's why it got ruined.
Yeah. Does anyone else have any new iPhones or any new business that happened?
The cat threw up on my couch today.
Oh, God. Yeah. Cats just... Yeah. What is the deal with cats?
Well, I don't know, but I was like... The cat threw up this morning, and I was like, oh, I'll clean up it. It's an old cat, whatever.
Yeah.
Then I go grocery shopping and to do laundry, and what happens? I come back, and the cat has thrown up on the couch.
Oh.
If you guys ever come over, I'm not going to tell you which cushion he threw up on, though.
It's going to be one of those kind of like Russian roulette games, except no one dies, what? And you just kind of have a really smelly pant leg for a while.
Yes. So anyway, so that's really all that has happened. Oh, and I had a column up on Robot 6 today. I don't know if you guys
saw. What's it about action figures?
It is about action figures. So we can also talk about that if you'd like, because that is my hobby.
Very cool. Oh, yeah, I think you've posted a little about it before.
Yes, I like them action figures. So anyway, so Rob Liefeld is awesome.
Yeah, and, I was making fun of him for the Captain America boobs, but you got to respect him because he did bring he was really popular in the 80s, and he did also introduce a whole lot of great X-Men characters, including Deadpool.
Yes, he did.
And we all know how Alex feels about Deadpool.
I love him.
Alex, you love him?
Yeah.
Why don't you marry him?
I was going to say that I want to get married.
Because all of Deadpool's personalities would have to say something at the wedding.
And also his fingers do fall off a lot. So I'd be kind of worried about the ring being lost.
It's true. So, it's rough. It's a rough thing. But you know, every relationship has its sacrifices, Alex.
Yeah. And speaking of relationships having sacrifices, since our time was sacrificed last time, we got to quickly go through our Sam's picks and then my picks again, and then go back to the interviewing you. So, okay, Sam?
So, this week I was looking at Powers Volume 5, the new printing of Anarchy. And this is one of my top books all around, mostly because it combines my latent affection for superheroes with my ongoing and never-dying affection for crime fiction. And overall, I think this is what you get, four comics in the collection. It's a $15 book. So pretty adequate value.
And if you missed it the first time around, that's sort of why this is happening now, because it's a
pretty thing
for, which I think is good, because I mean, most trades you can easily get still, but some trades do require reprinting, and they usually will do that if it's not that if it's really that hard to find.
Mm-hmm. And for all the attention that the first arc of Powers got and continues to get, Who Killed Retro Girl? I always thought that Powers was a book that gets better as it continues, and this particular arc is one of those times. So that's from Bendis and Emming, and my first pick. My other pick was Goats, Infinite Typewriters trade, Volume 1.
You're going to have to explain that one to me.
I have no fear, sir. Goats, my dear Mike, is a webcomic. And not just any webcomic, but one of the most esoteric webcomics available today, considering its current subject matter, which is the arc that's being explored in Infinite Typewriters. You see, Mike, there's actually an infinite number of monkeys at an infinite number of typewriters. And they
code.
Yes, they are responsible for scripting the entire universe as we know it in all dimensions. This Goats comes from the devious mind of John Rosenberg. You can find it at goats.com. And I don't read it that often because I haven't read it. I haven't read it in a little while, and it's very, very difficult to pick up.
I'd imagine as much.
Yeah. So it's very helpful to have a story like this in a collected edition. I would say that this is a great thing to have for you, especially if you like off the wall. What the fuck is going on?
Now, is it something that you can sort of you can
sounds like
off to a angry kid?
To an angry kid?
Yeah, because I'm just sort of for some reason I'm thinking angry kid.
Is somebody angry today?
I don't know. I'm just hearing some yelling. Sort of reminds me. I don't know why.
You could certainly throw it at an angry child, and then they would shut up.
Oh, you can throw it. Okay, I just meant hand it over if you want to calm them down.
Goats is a very chuckable webcomic.
Okay.
Those are my picks for the week.
Alrighty.
Okay.
My picks of the week are first X-Men and Spider-Man by Christos Gage and Mario Alberti, famous Italian artist, and it's a great miniseries that was kind of only 4 issues. It's $20 for the 4 issues plus the X-Men comic where the X-Men first met Spider-Man, and according to all kind of meetups where the kind of a superhero team meets a new superhero and they don't know each other yet, there always has to be a fight because they don't understand that there could be other superheroes that aren't villains.
Yeah.
And so, but they include that at the... Sorry. They include that at the end, and then each issue is really cool because it's all this art done from a different time, so each hero will look different in each issue. So Spider-Man will first start off looking normal, then he'll go to Black Suit Spider-Man, and then he'll go to Ben Reilly Spider-Man, and the X-Men will all be different in each issue, and then there'll be a different X-Men in each series, because sort of the X-Men were kind of more in use in certain centuries, we all know.
And, certain centuries?
Yeah. Not centuries, sorry, decades. Kind of the 80s and the 70s and the 90s had different X-Men, of course. You know, you had the Dazzler, and then you had, the Dazzler, and I'm trying to think of, Angel, and then there was Archangel. Like, you know, they had to bring, like, you know, make the characters more angrier and a little more misunderstood.
More angrier.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm the Archangel.
It was a great read. I enjoyed it. It was one of those really interesting stories, and it's really, like, it just creates a villain, and I think it does what it does what it's good at, and I respect it for that. And my next pick was Patsy Walker, Hellcat. This is one cat that won't throw up on anyone's couch or pee anywhere where it shouldn't. This is Patsy Walker, who's a fashion model, and it's been one of my favorite miniseries. It's hilarious, it's adorable, it's cute, it's quirky, and the art is fantastic. It's David LaFuente, who is this Spanish artist who lives in London as of right now, and it's one of my favorite pieces. It's one of my favorite comics. I can't begin to tell you, talk to you about it. All I know right now is that... Okay. Sorry. I'm the iPod is sort of setting itself up right now. It's plugged in. But the art is fantastic, and I would highly pick it up. I would suggest picking it up. It's $17 altogether, and you got the five issue miniseries, then you also have the Marvel Comics Presents issues 1 through 4, and that is a fantastic collection right there. And just pick it up. I can't say any more. If you like, if you want to kind of get into a hero that you haven't heard about, Hellcat is the one that I would go for because, first of all, she's a redhead. Fantastic.
I knew there was a catch.
Of course. And it's fantastic. That's but those are my picks. Now, we already had this discussion yesterday, but David, you want to talk to us again about your actual method for picking comics? Because this is something interesting, because if I actually could keep to what you were doing, I probably wouldn't be doing this podcast, and I probably would be still playing comics. But
well, every week my girlfriend and I go in and we buy 3 comics each in order to keep our comics budget. So, like, for example, this previous week, Avengers the Initiative, Guardians of the Galaxy, and Nova came out. Those are my 3 favorite titles. So I picked those up, on weeks the books would come out, I'd pick up my books, which would never be more than 3. And then if there was a week where something I read regularly didn't come out, what the three a week rule does is it allows me to pick up something new, especially if something I'm reading is sort of like going by the wayside. Like, for example, I'm a big fan of Captain Britain in MI-13, which I thought was a fantastic series, but now that it's canceled, that frees up a slot for one of these other books I might want to read down the line. But like I said, it gives me an incentive to sort of curb my spending, but at the same time, it facilitates growth. So I know that I'm never buying more than 12 comics a month, though sometimes if there's absolutely nothing that's come out, I can trade in 3 comics for a $10 trade.
That's fascinating. I mean, that's definitely a smart idea.
Yeah, it really helps with the...
Go
ahead. Go ahead.
Is there any sort of procedure you go through if a trade or some sort of collection that you would like to get is more than $10? Do you just not buy it?
Well, luckily I shop places like Midtown Comics and Bergen Street Comics where you get a discount. So I can use that credit money to sort of procure something else. But for the most part, there aren't a lot of trades that I read that are over $10 after a discount.
Yeah, actually mentioned something last night about the Vertigo trades, and you also picked up Air as well. Do you want to...
What happens is, for example, Air came out. Air was a $10 trade. Every Vertigo starter trade is $10.
Which I think is an awesome deal. Now that I know about this, I'm going to go and pick up a lot of them.
Like Northlanders, I think, collects the first 8 issues of Northlanders, the first trade, if I remember correctly, and it's $10, which you can't really beat. I mean, that's like the price of an Adam Sandler video, Adam Sandler DVD. I think you'd be much better off buying, a Brian Wood trade paperback than you would buying any of that other stuff.
You don't wind up crying and ending up in a pool of your own regret afterwards as well.
That's right.
And wasting more time.
Yeah.
Right.
With Adam Sandler sucking your life away.
Mm-hmm.
So for the most part, it really helps. And like I said, it also allowed us to, that $10 trade was enough for us to say, hey, this is really cool. We got a really good comic. And we were able to then really get into the series and pick up like issue 7, when that came out and stuff like that. So we're really into sort of, building our collection, but not overburdening, building our collection and reading the comics we really like, but also it forces us to buy comics that we think that are either quality or that, that we feel, it basically prevents us from buying crap.
Yeah.
I think that
definitely having a trade allows you to sort of get a better idea of what a comic is if you haven't ever read it before.
Right.
Than just sort of picking up a random issue.
Right. Well, exactly. And it, like I said, it gives us a nice, gives us a breadth and depth of what we're going to do. But if there's a comic that doesn't make the 3-a-day rule or 3-a-week rule, we can say, well, I mean, it just really helps us sort of create that standard attrition. Like, yeah, I've been really enjoying Iron Fist. Yeah, this is an example.
But, you know, whatever. I can't justify spending $3.99 for it because Guardians of the Galaxy, Nova, and Avengers of the Initiative, in my mind, are much better. So, you know, it's sort of a trade-off. But,
exactly. Okay.
Yeah, so basically, I mean, like, you get, I don't know how many comics you guys get, but I used to have a really bad, comic habit.
Oh, right? I actually have a $250 dollars worth of comics still in a box upstate in the upstate New York at my comic book store that I need to buy.
Oh,
and it's painful.
It's a tremendous amount of money. And at the end of the day, how many of those 250 will you read?
Some of them were just sort of I forgot to take them off my list of things, and she's pretty tough about, you know, the woman that does run the store is very tough about it. Like, it's like she's not gonna just say, "Oh, okay, yeah, we'll just put it on the like rack." It's just like, no, you gotta buy it.
Right. So, yeah, for us, I mean, that's really what makes the difference, you know. So we love it, but at the same time, and certainly we trade up each other's things. Like, she gets X-Force, Amazing Spider-Man, sorted issues of Punisher and stuff like that, and so it helps. Because sometimes we can read each other's comics, but there's some comics she reads that I don't like.
Oh, what does she read that you don't like?
I don't usually like the
what?
I don't like it in public. I don't usually like the owl, so I don't like in public.
Okay.
As a general rule. Because I work with these people, and they can make my life miserable.
That's better than just sort of to not know about some things.
Right, I mean, there are some things that I don't care for, but for the most part, you know, out of professional courtesy, I say, you know, I don't usually say anything bad about them or their books. Like I don't want them to say bad stuff about my webcomic series, High Moon. I'd like to pretend that if they don't say anything, it means they really love it.
We're going to say something, though, but I think it's going to be nice things. So that's good. Don't worry about that.
But, hey, wait, hold on for a second. I've got some cat drama.
Okay.
There you go, cat. Happy? I've got a cat who...
Show that cat what's what.
Well, I've got a cat who is... I've got a cat who's in heat.
Heat. Oh, is it trying to mate with you?
Not me, my other cat.
Oh, okay.
It does like to think that it's trying to mate with me, but I can't do that. My girlfriend says that I can't date out of species.
Yeah. Badly.
Yeah. I know. That's like a very firm rule.
Yeah, so. No, you already have a girlfriend. You can't have a harem or anything.
Right, and it can't be of other non-human creatures.
Yeah. This isn't, what's that island? Island of Dr. Moreau. That's the, you know.
It's true. It's not the island of Dr. Moreau. And so, because it's not the island of Dr. Moreau, you know, I have to treat my girlfriend with respect and not sleep with her cute cat.
That was a good girl. You don't want to do anything to her.
That's right. What I'm saying.
Okay.
So, moving on.
Yeah. Your bookstore of choice was also Brooklyn, and it was
Bergen Street Comics. Yes, that's right. BergenStreetComics.com is my bookstore, my comic book store of choice. I mean, certainly sometimes I'm in Manhattan and I stop by Forbidden Planet or Midtown Comics East or Hanley's. But definitely, you know, even though it's a little out of the way for us, I prefer to go to Bergen Street Comics. The guy who runs it is one of the coolest guys in comics.
And he's also on Twitter as well. So,
yes, he is. BergenStreetComics.com.
So let's move on to, I guess, our review. I guess we can officially say the review. An interview. And I guess we can talk about, because I actually had a chance to finally finish all of High Moon last night. And I just got to know who Red is, but I think that's probably more for you to reveal in the next issue.
Yes, it is. We will see more of Red in that's sort of the tease.
Yeah.
I mean, we saw Red in season 3. Red shows up a couple times, but we'll definitely get to it in season 3. But yeah, let's see. Everyone needs a traveling companion.
Exactly.
So yeah, so thank you guys for having me for the interview.
Yeah, it's so like last night, kind of after you left, I kind of asked Sam, and Sam had found something interesting that actually was really intrigued him. So Sam, do you want to ask that question? You know, kind of this vague area of geekiness.
I went looking around for your other works, sir.
Yes.
And I have looking through, and I found that you wrote a Vampire the Masquerade miniseries.
I did. Yeah, it's collected as a trade paperback. Yes, I did.
Tremere, the Book of Damages, it's called.
Yes, it is.
You know, I like Vampire the Masquerade a great deal. It's coming from a role playing sort of upbringing. I like D&D, but I really like the vampire universe. And my question is, there's a huge market for comics and based on pre-existing properties like Vampire.
Yes.
What's it like to write your own material based on that sort of pre-existing source material? I guess.
That's a good question. Hold on for a second and I'll answer. Get out of her face, Kat.
Oh. My questions are all going to be about mating cats.
Okay. Anyway, sorry. I liked working on my own material. I'm lucky because most of the material I've worked on has been my own material. But, so I actually prefer that over licensed material. I mean, certainly I grew up with role-playing games and stuff. But for me, there's a tremendous amount of freedom that comes from working on my own stuff. You know, and that kind of freedom you can't beat.
Yeah.
So, while it's cool to be asked to write, whatever, Captain America or any of those other things, at the end of the day, stories that inspire me and that I'm driven to tell. I don't want to just write some inconsequential story that doesn't mean anything to anybody. You know, like...
Is there a sort of mercenary appeal to writing this? Is writing, for instance, vampire or D book, or
I'm sorry, Sam. What'd you say?
Okay.
Someone's being beat. Like,
I don't know what that is exactly.
I thought it was cat and heifer for a little there, like when I was just like, can cats
yeah. Not a cat and heifer, or... some kid on my frequency.
Yeah.
On your frequency.
That sounds like a terrible household.
It does.
Oh, okay, yeah. Anyway.
Wow.
Sorry.
Back to your regularly scheduled podcast.
Yeah.
Is there a certain, would doing a project like Vampire or a D&D book or something in that vein, that serve to get your name in the field if you need to do that? Is that you say that's a good way to do that?
Well, I mean, I think certainly, I mean, everything is different for everyone. I mean, certainly, what was nice about it for me was it was like a love letter to, it was a love letter to my old history in gaming. But I don't necessarily think it's a tremendous way to get your name out there, because ultimately, at the end of the day, who's going to remember that you wrote an issue of Superman 554 or Superman 654? Right. You know, it's more interesting to have your own work be known for. Is Alan Moore more known for the work he did on Green Lantern, or is he more known for From Hell or Watchmen or League of Extraordinary Gentlemen? Warren Ellis, who created Transmet, well, yeah, he might be known for his issue of Thunderbolts, but at the end of the day, a lot of that work can be undone by anyone. You know, but nobody can undo the work you've done by yourself. You know,
yeah.
I don't think Eric Larson is worried that, you know, somebody's going to come back onto Savage Dragon after he's left it and, you know, make Savage Dragon a clone of himself or undo Savage Dragon's marriage or... You know, and that's kind of what I mean. It's like Eric Larson has an incredible sense of style and flair and drama and action and suspense. And all those things are really cool. But at the end of the day, when he goes home at night, he owns that. And if he were to pass on, you know, he can pass that on to his children. He can't pass on the fact that he wrote issue 554 of Superman.
Yeah.
You know, you create a certain degree of legacy. You know, look at Walt Disney. You know, Walt Disney, you know, created all this stuff himself. And then other people came in and sort of totally changed it around and made it far more insidious than it was. But, you know, what do you want to do? Do you want to own the stuff at the end of the day and create a portfolio for yourself? Or do you want to work for the man? And certainly I think that there's a balance between the two, obviously. But, you know, I think that it's important to both do the mainstream stuff, but also do the stuff that you're passionate about.
Yeah, you know? I mean, and if you can, you know, and also it is about, like, making some money at the end of the day as well, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, certainly. I mean, I don't do this for fun. I do this because it's my career.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, yeah, certainly people need to eat. I mean, I need to eat and I need to get paid. But if I like what I'm doing, I will, you know, I'll usually settle for less money. Because I like what I'm doing.
Exactly.
You know, but, you know, that's basically it.
And I gotta say, I just sort of actually was, like, I finally looked at the Wikipedia article for you as well, and I just learned that you did a Yours Truly Johnny Dollar comic.
Yes.
Which blows my mind, because I actually have a couple of recordings of Yours Truly Johnny Dollar, because I used to do a whole radio show where I would play, like, old radio dramas.
Yeah, from Hollywood, it's time now for the transcribed adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account.
Yes,
that is there's truly Johnny Dollar. And then the trumpet player.
And I love it. It's just like, did she fake the accident, or was it murder?
Yeah, I know. It's, for me, I grew up on pulps and old-time radio shows. I mean, Gunsmoke was such a huge inspiration for High Moon. And the work of John Meston and Norm Macdonald and Bill Conrad. But yeah, I love Johnny Dollar. That was my first full published work. I had some other stuff in the anthologies before that, but it was the first work I did for Moonstone, and I loved it.
I'll have to burn you a CD of what I have of Johnny Dollar now.
I actually have quite a bit of it, but I might have to burn you a CD of what I have.
Yeah, that'd be good. We can trade.
Yes, so, but anyway, as a whole, I love that stuff. I grew up with that first Johnny Dollar story sort of plays to my love of old-time radio and theater, since I was a theater major for a while.
You got Mike now.
I'm actually a theater major right now, so.
Yeah, I was a total theater geek. I got actually expelled from drama school.
Wow, what would you do?
Oh, it's a complicated story, but I got expelled from drama school, so I can tell people that I got expelled from drama school.
Your skill went missing, and,
Yeah, it was basically, I went to the school called VPA, which was the School for the Visual and Performing Arts in Maryland. And, I was a total drama major, and I was in, a bunch of shows for, like, Oliver, Oklahoma, South Pacific, Joseph from the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat, Agatha Christie's The Mousetrap, Up the Down Staircase, Jane Eyre, and stuff like that. So, I mean, I love that stuff. I love drama.
Awesome, awesome, awesome.
So, the Johnny Dollar story actually takes place in actually the town I grew up in, for the most part. So, it takes place at this old theater called the Tivoli. And it's about a woman who, or not a woman, but it's about a bunch of people. But a woman is in the a woman who is, like, maybe getting murdered, and a theater that might be burned down. And, you know, it's kind of a crazy, it's a crazy story. It's a nice, I think it's a fun pastiche.
Very nice.
So yeah, so. I did join the story. Stone about it's in this anthology called Moonstone Monsters Ghosts, and I love it. It's I think there's a free PDF actually available on my website that you can check out.
DavidGallagher.com?
I think it's on DavidGallagher.com. I actually have to pull it out. But it's an 8-page story. The art is by George Broderick Jr. So it should say read online. See, now I have to find out.
Actually, you go to check it out. You got the webarchive.org kind of going on. And open it up. See if I can
actually I messed up my main
page of the site. That's why it has the archive.org thing in there. But yeah, if you go to DavidGallagher.com, in the project's all about it.
Cool.
So let me see if I can find it for you. But yeah, so I did that, and then I took a sort of a weird hiatus from comics for a while, and came back with High Moon, which has been, like I said, very, very exciting.
Actually, so, I think it's really interesting. I think we've talked about it, you taught comics, right?
Yeah, I did. I taught comics for a while, and then I also and worked in publishing. So, and advertising, obviously. So I wrote a bunch of ads for the old, not for the old, but I wrote a series of award-winning ads for the New York City Police Department in the interim. So, yeah, I mean,
so
that was a lot of fun.
You actually worked for the police.
Yes.
Interesting.
So,
it's kind of interesting because also you were ripped off, too, as well, by Northland. Like, what was that show?
Southland.
Southland
show.
Yeah, and they stole
one of the ads I wrote for one of their dialogue promo scenes. I was so mad. I was like, that is exactly the line I wrote for New York City Police Department. You guys suck.
Actually.
Oh, well, not only that, I was also ripped. I was also ripped off. Well, I wasn't ripped off per se, but the work I did for the NYPD was also used for the promotional site for The Dark Knight for the Gotham City Police Department.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
I work for Warner Brothers writing High Moon. Also, it's really funny that all the work I did for the NYPD's website is now on the Gotham City Police Department website. Oh, my God.
Do you think they're gonna make the whole like, well, Gotham City is really New York City in DC Comics.
Yeah, it was kind of a weird thing. Kind of crazy, but cool, you know. It's like, wow, I wrote all that stuff. That's awesome. So
but yet they're ripping me off. That sucks.
Yeah, wow. Exactly. So for the most part all that stuff sort of brought me to High Moon, which is which I really enjoy. It's the story of an unchanging man in a changing time, and who is forced with the decision as to whether or not he wants to live like a beast or die like a man. So it's really cool, and it runs for free right now on ZudaComics.com.
Yeah, and I think Zuda itself is like pink, right? Because they've kind of brought around a lot of these kind of comics that. Do you think you would have tried doing this webcomic on your own without Zuda, or was it sort of a, let's see if I can get some work with them, and what can I do?
Well, I'd come up with the idea for High Moon years, many years before that, but nothing had really gelled for me. I actually wrote the entire plot synopsis a long time ago, but it didn't really gel, and that was really hard. It was really hard to sort of, to deal with that. So, but eventually, Kwanza Johnson got a job working for DC, and he let me know that they were looking for, a project and they were going to start something. So when I was at New York Comic Con in 2007, I reacquainted myself with Steve Ellis, who I'd known from our doing work at Moonstone together. And
so the two of you met, actually. Okay, I was going to
ask. Yeah, we had met many years before. So, but I reacquainted myself because we were just friendly. You know, we were friendly in that we know the same people, kind of professional courtesy thing. And I got to talking to Steve about High Moon, and I ended up working with him on it. And I think it's been nothing but awesome. And I, in the 10 years I've been in comics, have not had a better
I've never had a better experience than working with DC and Zuda and Steve Ellis and Scott Brown, our letterer. It's been really, really cool.
So now your actual process of writing, like, do you kind of prepare ahead of time at all, or is it actually sort of you and Steve just sort of going back and forth the week before to sort of like, okay, what's this week's...
I work from an incredibly, incredibly, incredibly dense plot structure. It's incredibly dense. Yes, certainly I write ahead of schedule. Like, okay, we update 4 pages a week. So what we'll do is when we work on that week's batch, you know, we've already gone through the script, we've made layouts, and then from there we break everything down. And you can have some deviation. We sometimes do. We have some deviation between what I've written in the script and what Steve draws. And usually it's for the betterment of the story, and it's fine. But what happens is it all starts from just an insanely detailed plot structure that has all the beats. And the working arrangement we have with Steve is like, we can change anything in the script itself as long as the structure and the beats remain where they are. Because if those get thrown off, then we throw off the pacing of the story. You know, and that's one of the things I'd like to maintain is that degree of adventure and excitement where every couple of pages is this holy hell in a handbasket kind of cliffhanger.
So, you know? Compared to the experience of actually writing a full, like, 32-page comic and what other kind of formats are there? I mean...
Well, there's 32... Your 22-page comic.
Who's knocking?
Oh, that's me.
Oh, okay.
Sorry. That was for the cats.
Okay.
We write 60 pages, so it's a very, very dense story. What we do is very, very dense. And so it creates definitely a sense of... there's a lot of story in there. But it's differently because... It works different a little because I've never actually written a standard comic story. I've written short stories, and Johnny Dollar was like 48 pages, and Vampire the Masquerade was 48 pages. So writing 60 pages for High Moon is pretty standard for me.
Okay.
Okay, all right.
And I guess kind of having it now become a trade is sort of like... But how do you feel now that like you're going to get to actually see it in a full trade form? Did you think that you were ever going to see it as a trade? Or
I did think that we would eventually see it as a trade. I mean, the idea that I thought would be that essentially what makes the webcomic experience really great is that you're test marketing this comic. You know, you're saying, okay, what are the metrics? When do people show up to read this comic? How many people do we have reading it? And we have a pretty good idea that we have like the comic has been read like 2.1 million times.
Wow.
And that's pretty good.
that's better than good.
2.1 million times is pretty good. So, you know, it's very exciting for me. To have that, certainly. But, I mean, the web makes such a great platform to test market things and to sort of finagle things a bit if they don't quite work right. And then print, you know, is definitely a huge revenue stream in terms of getting people to buy something they want to put on their bookshelves. I mean, I couldn't be happier with that it's coming to print. We turned in all the final files not too long ago, and I'm thrilled and elated at all of it.
To repeat the question from last night, I was asking you, I believe I asked you, the question was, how long it took you to get into the business in a way, and like, in your opinion, what is the toughest field to try to go about getting into the business, and what would be like considered the easiest, I guess?
Yeah, I don't know if there's necessarily an easy way.
I'd imagine as much.
Yeah, but in the same time, like, it's... You know, like, I broke into comics as an intern. Faxed my resume to Marvel's digital department in 1999. Started working there the next day.
Wow.
Yeah, as an intern. It was awesome. I moved from Baltimore to...
Any good intern stories as well?
A few. But, like, for example, we did a really cool April Fool's Day joke where we pretended that Spider-Man had joined the X-Men. it was called X Marks the Spider.
I think I remember that. Was there a post recently where they kind of, like, reminded people about that old story?
Yeah, I wrote that one.
Then you get to work with – did you get to work with Stan Lee? I can't remember what it was.
We worked with I worked on the story back 10 years ago when I worked at Marvel. And so Marvel asked me to revisit that as somebody who's a former intern at Marvel. So I was like, hey, I'm a former intern at Marvel. I'm writing a story about this really cool thing that we did 10 years ago. It was awesome. Yeah. I had a great time. So, basically I worked at Marvel till about 2002 as an intern, staff, very briefly staff, and then as freelance. Working in marketing and creative departments, and I had a lot of fun. I left that to do advertising and a bunch of other stuff, freelance writing for comics for Moonstone, stuff like that. But it was really hard to break in as a writer, which is what I was trying to do, because most people don't... Writing is a harder thing to sell on somebody. It takes longer to read than it does to look at a pretty picture and say, that's a pretty picture.
You're better off.
Yeah. So, I think it's definitely easier to break in as an editor, a colorist, a letterer, than it is to break in as a penciler or a writer. I mean, certainly you still need to break into any of those fields. You need drive, desire, ambition, talent, personability. I mean, I know a lot of people who are total dicks, don't get work in comics because they're total dicks. And it requires, a tough skin and being able to not get paid on any regular basis. Certainly it's freelance. You're working freelance for the most part when you're doing these things. So it's not like you're going to get a steady paycheck. You might get a bunch of paychecks or no paychecks for a couple weeks. It's very much a feast or famine sort of scenario.
I think your girlfriend Valerie actually had a great article up recently in Comicology where she has an op-ed article piece where she talked about the rules of being a freelancer, right?
Yes. And it definitely is true. Like, I personally have a rule that I have to get paid. And it has to come out.
Yeah.
So I have to get paid. It has to come out. And typically, I won't work with a company who hasn't been around for like 5 years. It's because, startups are kind of dicey.
That's understandable.
And yeah, you actually have the skill, like you've been around long enough that you can actually have that rule. Where some people will have to sort of be like, yeah, I'll join you. It's like, I just need to get my name out somehow.
Yeah, but also these days with things like Twitter, blogs, Facebook even, and so many conventions, I don't think you necessarily need that. As long as you, like you said, if you have the talent, the drive, the desire, the ambition, and the sensibility to know, like, how this industry works. Because at the end of the day, I'm not going to give if I'm an editor, I'm not going to give the story to a friend of mine as a favor. I'm going to give the story to a friend of mine because either comics are a business and they know how to meet their deadlines. That's exactly what it is. Everybody has an idea, but a lot of people think that with those ideas they can write. And that's not necessarily true, because certainly there are many great ideas that are ruined by very bad execution.
Or by overthinking.
Right, or by overthinking. So that's basically it. So I think certainly, there's a lot of great people giving advice on Twitter, for example, C.B. Cebulski, Ron Peraza, about how to break in as a penciler. But breaking in as a writer is much tougher.
Mm-hmm. Definitely something you want to think about beforehand of actually doing it.
Right, exactly.
I would consider myself a penciler. Like, should I put myself out there on Twitter saying, hey, I'm a penciler, you guys have any advice? Or should I put some examples of my work on there?
Put some examples of your work on Twitter or on your blog and drive people to it by being cool and compelling. There's a whole system to how to market yourself on Twitter.
I mean,
and
don't
stuff
spam
like
yourself. I mean, you definitely don't.
Obviously,
know,
that would be a little more desperate than I'm going for.
Exactly.
Right. So, but I mean, for the most part, like I said, I think that as a penciler, you have a much easier job than anywhere else in comics. So.
As a writer, actually, like, kind of, did you just sort of approach Steve saying, "I was like, how about would you like to do like art with me? Like, I have this idea. I know you're an artist. Would you like to work together on this?"
Well, no, actually, that's not quite how it happened.
Okay.
Steve's work I knew from I have a crazy ability to know who I'm talking about. Like I know Steve. I've known Steve through the decade. Like I said, we didn't work together at Moonstone, but we certainly have that familiarity. If we have all the same peers, blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
So I saw him. I was at his table. We engaged in a conversation about, like, hey, I really like the work you did on A, B, C, and D. Because I was familiar with A, B, C, and D. I was like, I really like the work you did in these projects. It's like, well, thank you. What are you up to now? Well, I'm currently up to these things. Oh, really? Yeah, well, blah, 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 blah. Oh, yeah, and I've got this werewolf project I was thinking about doing, High Moon. He's like, oh, really? That sounds really cool. And then that was pretty much it. So that day when I got back from the con, Steve had already emailed me saying, "Hi Moon, dude, let's totally do it."
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, it's cool. So it was very casual. It wasn't like, hey, I'm an artist and I'd like you to work on this. It was much more like, I just said a little bit about it, and he was like, that is really cool. I would love to work on that with you.
Very cool. So you just really want to just sort of, if you do know an artist, just don't be saying, like, let's work together. It's like, just tell them what you are doing and see if they're interested, really.
Right. You have to keep them engaged. It has to be compelling. You know, you have to... I mean, I didn't go trying to sell him on High Moon. I was just going to be friendly, you know, and being a cool guy. I was just trying to be a cool guy. And that's really, at the end of the day, what you need to be in comics. You need to be a cool guy.
Hey.
Hey. You gotta be a Fonzie. You gotta be hey. So, and that's basically it. You need to definitely sort of, be cool and don't be pushy and don't be a prick and don't be arrogant and just be cool and have the talent, have the drive, have the ambition, have the desire, and move from there.
Okay, cool. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
Yeah, Sam, any questions from you?
Well, that Zuda is owned by DC.
Yes, it is.
And
ZoomComics.com is where you can read almost 200 200 different webcomics.
Some of them award-winning, including yours.
Yes. Us and Bayou.
Yeah.
So.
And also, while I'm looking at your various works, you did some work for the CBLDF with Danielle Corsetto.
Yes.
Writes and draws her own webcomic, Girls in Slingshot.
Yes.
This sort of ties in with the whole webcomics and sustainable webcomics model. Do you consider being part of Zuda? Are you also, I guess, you consider yourself part of the webcomics community as a whole, or do you have like a rapport with other people who are like hosting their own comic
to answer your question, actually I do. It's interesting because Danielle, for example, I've known for almost as long as I've been in comics. She's essentially from my hometown, and
Maryland.
From Maryland.
Okay.
So yeah, she wasn't born in Hawaii. So that would have been awesome.
That would have been a great little thing. It's like we both moved. What?
We're both from Honolulu. No, but you know, I was born in the same state as the president of the United States. How
that's
cool!
That's pretty badass nowadays.
Yeah, that's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, I've known Danielle for a very long time, and I've known a bunch of other web cartoonists for a long time, just like I've known regular comic creators for a long time. But I definitely consider myself part of the webcomics community. Obviously, the people at Zuda, it's sort of like we're our own little tribe. Zuda is sort of neighboring the comics community nation, and then the webcomics nation. It's sort of like this little reservation where people pass back and forth. Like Dean Haspiel is Activate, you know, so he's got webcomics there, but he also draws for, you know, he drew like The Alcoholic, for example.
Yeah, which is actually, I still have to read that. I actually took that out from the library, from a certain librarian that you and Val know, actually, Karen Green.
Oh, right, right.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's definitely kind of like a, like he worked with Harvey Pekar. So definitely Dean is in both camps. Dean Haspiel, and you've got other people like Kevin Colden and Molly Crabapple who are in both camps. So, like, Zuda's a tribe of talented creators, just like Activate, just like Drunk Duck, just like The Chemistry Set. You know, there's definitely a love of one another and a mutual camaraderie of, like, I work on comics, you work on comics. Like the Transmission X guys, Carl Kershaw and Andy Belanger and Cameron Stewart. You know, certainly there's a back and forth between all that, and I think that's cool, yeah. So, and to sort of put the cap on the whole conversation, like, we definitely consider ourselves part of the webcomics community. Bobby Timoney and I, Bobby Timoney draws Night Owls for Zuda. He and I went up to Boston or Northampton for the webcomics weekend that was hosted. You know, and we had a really good time. But yeah, we definitely consider ourselves part of that community.
Very cool. And I guess any more questions before I guess we sort of finish the interview and we move on to Identity Crisis?
I'm good.
Okay.
That was all I had.
For yeah. Thank you so much, David, for agreeing to be interviewed by us. And I hope you had a fun time. Do you have any questions for us?
I don't. oh, yes, I do.
Okay.
Uh-oh.
I do. My first question is, who are your favorite comic characters?
Oh, that's really interesting, actually.
Alex, you can go first.
Okay, I grew up with Spider-Man, so I think it's sort of... Spider-Man is always sort of there as a favorite of mine. But recently, I have certainly some... There are some comic characters that I have kind of grown to love after a while. Ex Machina, Mare 100... is one of my favorite characters. It's like an interesting idea. And Atomic Robo is one of my favorite characters just because of the writing for that series has become sort of one of my favorite. It's just very interesting. It kind of comes out of nowhere, like these jokes, and it just fits very well. Along with Deadpool by Daniel Way, though. I gotta say, I tried reading some of the other Deadpool, and it was not as enjoyable for me personally. And then there's Hellcat. I kind of like the very odd out of not the obvious characters.
Yeah. So what about you, you two?
I guess I'll go first. I'll go one from Marvel, one from DC, and then one kind of out there. It's tough for me to say in Marvel because I have a bunch that I like and respect, but if I'm going to talk about one, I guess I'll talk about the one that strikes me the most. And I'm going to have to go with the Sentry.
Yeah.
Really?
And the reason I think the Sentry is because I'm a pretty good fan. I'm a decent fan of Superman, and I think of Sentry as Superman with all the problems Superman should have. Aside from this, because I think he's the most fascinating character. Because, like, the way I had a discussion with a friend of mine saying, you know, it seems like the greater the power somebody has in the Marvel Universe, the more fucked up they are, and the Sentry is the most powerful character. Well. Debatably, and he's definitely very, very screwed up, and I just love his storyline where he's constantly in a struggle of trying to do the right thing, but he ends up doing something bad in the process, and he doesn't know that he's causing it, and I don't know, it seems like a very interesting idea to go about a superhero. And that's for Sentry, and for DC, I'm gonna have to go with Batman.
Interesting.
Is anyone? I grew up with Batman, and he's just been around. I've read not just the regular mainstream Batman, but I've also been a fan of like Elseworlds Batmans. Like, I loved the Batman and Superman Red Son, the Russian terrorist Batman.
I gotta say, I actually saw there was a action figure collection of from Red Son, and I was
yeah, I saw those, and I want the Batman one. I mean, I know the artist got a lot of crap for it, but I love the Russian Batman hat. And I also just read Batman Gotham by Gaslight, which is a bit of a steampunk Batman, where he goes after Jack the Ripper and stuff. And you could basically throw him almost in any kind of storyline, and he kind of fits. And that's just my favorite DC. And then I guess my kind of character that's out there. I'm a huge fan of Mike Mignola.
Mm-hmm.
And I have been reading Hellboy since I started to fall in love with Mike Mignola, and I have to say Hellboy's probably one of my favorite characters because he's basically just like the cliche dude. But he's a dude who also happens to be a demon and has to go out and do all these things that people tell him to do. And I just think he's a very fascinating. He's just very entertaining. Not just the films. Like I actually read a lot of Mike Mignola's comics. I've read the Hellboy and DPRD. And I'm going to go with Hellboy.
Also, I forgot to say Madman and McGregor.
Oh, you're so cool.
Yeah.
Excellent. That's a way to get points.
Yeah, I kind of was I forgot and I was just like, oh, I can't let that go by.
Right.
Okay. Sam? There's just one more.
Yeah.
I'm gonna have to throw in Yorick from Why the Last Man.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Okay.
Because I love the Why the Last Man series and all the crap he had to deal with of being the last man on Earth surrounded by women. I was rooting for him the entire time.
Wow, that's cool,
Sam.
I gotta say, well, I grew up as a DC.
Me and Mike. Oh, yeah. Can we guess what one of Sam's characters is? Sam, would you?
You mind? Know exactly yeah. What I'm going to say.
We know what he's going to say.
It's a Frog Thor.
Is it really?
No.
No. No. I grew up with DC and the old archive editions, I will always have a special place in my heart for Batman and the Green Lantern and Captain Marvel and all the like big DC figures and the Legion of Superheroes that are good. But as my tastes changed, I have become like a rabid fan of Warren Ellis's work and. So one of my favorite characters in all of comics ever is Spider-Man Jerusalem. He's not for the moral fiber exactly, but he's a deep character. He's at once inspiring and horrifying for the amount of violence that he inspires and.
Would you say that he has inspired your op-ed articles, Sam?
He has. I've done some political writing for our college paper, and I can see where Spider's terrible, terrible personality has rubbed off on me. But other than Spider, I've always adored Phone Bone from Jeff Smith's Bone. He's the most adorable hero of a comic I think I've ever read. I really like the Frog Prince from Bill Willingham's Fables.
Oh yes, I love him too. Mike, I forgot him.
Mike told me. I asked him as I was reading it. Does the Frog Prince become as badass as I think he's about to become?
Oh, and I told Mike you he will not be disappointed.
Yes, and lo, I was not. He's fantastic. But yeah, those are mine.
It's cool. Mine would have to be. If you were to pick Marvel and DC, and we'll do one indie, though maybe two. For me, I think. All right. Well, my favorite female character in all of comics, bar none, is Firestar from Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends. Bar none.
Awesome.
Bar none.
I love that show.
Now we have at least the opening theme song intro now.
Yeah, my favorite episode, of course, being Seven Little Superheroes, because it's like the Marvel version of Harper's Island. uh, So for me, it's amazing. My favorite Marvel guy would probably have to be Banshee from the X-Men. Though I have so many others that come so close, like Quicksilver, Namor. Really, a lot of the jerky characters. U.S. Agent. Any character who's a real jerk, I tend to really like in Marvel.
What's actually really interesting is the fact that you mentioned Banshee, yeah. And you did write that article for kind of Harry April Fools where Spider-Man joins the X-Men. And yeah. X-Men 35 is kind of where like they first meet, because I just bought X-Men and Spider-Man, that trade collection. And Banshee first appears in that he didn't first appear, but he is the first one in the comic that you see.
Yeah, I love that guy.
Which I think is interesting.
I love that guy. He's awesome. Also a former New York City Police Department officer.
Really?
Ah.
Look it up.
Oh.
And formerly of Interpol. So,
you think
yeah.
Banshee would come back with the MI-13? I think that'd be a great little...
That would be awesome. I do love him. So, then for DC, Superman is up there, but I don't know. McGregor from High Moon, probably my favorite DC character. I know High Moon is such a great.
Although I probably should specify Tristan McGregor is my favorite.
Oh well, I like all the McGregors. Tristan is awesome, though I prefer. I can't say anything more than. I like all of the McGregors because I don't want to ruin season one for anyone.
Yeah.
So, or season two or three or four. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, and then I really enjoy both Hellboy and Atomic Robo. I think Atomic Robo is awesome. I think Hellboy is awesome.
Yay.
And, yay. So,
and I gotta say, next question though, if you had to pick only one, who would you pick to play in a video game though?
Who would I pick to play in a video game?
I know you and me have played Marvel Ultimate Alliance.
If I had to pick a character in a video game to play, well, what I like to do when I play Marvel Ultimate Alliance is I like to play Captain America as the U.S. Agent. He's my favorite character in that game. I love the U.S. Agent so much. It is amazing.
I do enjoy the Dan Slott Mighty Avengers storyline because that is like the only recent appearance I think I've seen, U.S. Agent I've seen.
No, he was in Omega Flight, too.
Oh, is he? Okay.
So, yeah. But I would also play, if Nova were in that game, I'd play Nova. If Speedball were in that game, I'd play Speedball.
Speedball
if Sunfire,
would be great, I think. Because...
Speedball slash Penance. Speedball before he was Penance?
Yeah, both.
Yeah.
Both. You'd have Speedball, and then you'd have Speedball...
Penance outfit.
As a variant. Yeah, as a variant.
I think that'd be great, actually, if they included that character in the new Marvel Ultimate Alliance, too, when it comes out.
I actually cannot wait to play the Green Goblin in that game, because he's one of my favorite villains, and I'm just happy he's finally going to get a chance to, you know.
And if you can get the mic on, Mike, you know, that'd be great, because then you could just start doing the Green Goblin impression while playing.
I love the Green Goblin. He's the only villain in the... Well, not the only villain in the Marvel Universe, but he's the one villain in the Marvel Universe... With the longest legacy.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Because
yeah, and the Osborn legacy has always been my favorite.
Well, yeah, because you've got Norman, then you've got Professor Hamilton, who is the Green Goblin, then you've got Harry, who is the Green Goblin, then Phil Urich, who is the Green Goblin. You had Roderick Kingsley, who is the Hobgoblin, based on the Green Goblin. You had Jason McIndale, who is the other Hobgoblin, based on, you know. Then you had the Demigoblin.
Yeah, the Demigoblin.
The two, then you had the two Gray Goblins, and then you had Menace.
Menace, that's a great current storyline, I gotta say.
And Headsman, who is in Thunderbolt.
That was a great moment in the current Thunderbolts with them versing Deadpool.
Yeah. So you've got a lot of people who are heavily inspired by the work that Norman Osborn did years ago. And that, now, to me, is very interesting.
And now he's one-upping Tony Stark as the Iron Patriot.
Yes. He's one-upping Tony Stark as the Iron Patriot. And that's fine for me, honestly, because I can't stand Tony Stark.
He's a dick in a metal condom.
Yes.
Oh.
Yes, he is. So, but anyway, yeah, so for me, that's interesting. But if I had to play any in a video game, I mean, Marvel Ultimate Alliance is my favorite video game.
Yeah.
One of them, definitely. Usually in the top two spot. But because Rock Band's, I think, my first favorite video game.
That's understandable.
But in X-Men Legends 2, I had the option to play Sunfire, and I did.
Nice. Okay.
Sunfire is awesome. So, yeah, so you have Sunfire, and you have, Sunfire is absolutely one of my favorite X-Men. Sunfire, Banshee. If I were to write the X-Men that I would use would drive people crazy because it wouldn't be Cyclops or Wolverine. It would be like Banshee, Angel, Iceman, Sunfire, Quicksilver, Rogue, Dazzler.
What about Libra?
Libra?
Well, what's the one that can understand all the languages? That I know, like
Cypher.
Cypher, yes.
Cypher, he's dead.
Yeah, I know. There's someone that we both know, Alex Zalbin, of a host of the Comic Book Club, that loves Cypher.
I do. Cypher's. I don't think Cypher's coming back.
Yeah.
But yeah,
no, Cypher reborn.
Yes. So that would be cool.
Yeah.
For my money, that's what I got going on.
And welcome to Masterpiece Comic Book Theater. I am mild-mannered photographer Alex Eddy, and I have here with me my actors for this show and my co-hosts, as always, Sam Riedel and Michael John Gilbert. Thank you for coming to me. And for today, we're doing a scene from Chapter 1 of Maintenance by Jim Massey and Robbie Rodriguez, a classic tale of chivalry in the Old West. Actually, no.
You're not reading the cues, Alex.
Sorry.
I wrote them in black on white paper. You should be able to read. Okay, try again.
Okay. All right. For this episode of Massey's Comic Book Theater, we're doing Chapter 1 of Maintenance by Jim Massey and Robbie Rodriguez about a pair of janitors for a evil scientist's lab.
Much better, much better. See what you do when you can when you try.
Yeah, reading is fun.
Okay, and to run down the cast, I will be playing the role of Doug.
I will be playing the role of Manny.
I will be playing the role of Boss and Professor Gineman. And so, we now begin our scene of Masterpiece Comic Book Theater of Maintenance. And take it away, guys.
This is a unique place, to be sure.
There are wonders and horrors.
Of course, the wonderful is subjective.
As is the horrible.
Few are lucky enough to witness such extremes of reality.
We belong to that.
So what say you put down your chocolate milk and beef jerky and go wipe up that fetid pile of shit outside of Lab 17? Fetid piles of shit don't clean themselves.
Jesus! Why do we have to wipe up fetid piles of shit?
How about it's our job?
Well, yeah. But these high and mighty Poindexters start whining for help if they spill a little Snapple on their desk. Like it would kill them to grab a paper towel.
No, Doug. The docs seem to have pretty important stuff to do.
And I don't. I still have to pry that carnivorous zombie kitten out of the vending machine.
Aw, jeez. Looks like we're gonna need another roll of towels.
45 minutes later. Good morning, boys. Heavens, you smell like a pot-fetted pile.
Yes.
Yes.
We know. Thank you. It's always nice to get your insight, Professor von Gineman.
One of Dr. Scholar's projects went a little sloppy.
What? No, no. It's not my marauding gigamorph, is it?
Not sure, Prof.
It was big and stinky and slimy. It had a face that looked like someone left Ernest Borgnine out of the sun.
Maybe it wasn't mine after all. I specifically requested zero Mostel.
You staying long, Professor von Gineman?
No, I just stopped by to check Dr. Scola's progress on my Gigamorph. I have penciled in the Golden Globe Awards for my next evil assault, and they're next week.
I guess they won't postpone the Golden Globes for you and your Gigamorph, eh, Prof?
No, they won't. They never do. Well, boys, it's been a pleasure, as usual. I must see Dr. Scola, then return to my secret lair, hidden in the mists of mystery beyond the understanding of men.
Is that the lair in Sacramento? Or the one in Chicago beneath the Denny's on 7th?
Chicago, but it's not a Denny's anymore. They've turned it into an Olive Garden. I do miss the Grand Slam breakfast, but the all-you-can-eat salad and breadsticks fried, some succor. And now I must away. See you, boys.
Sucker?
And that was Masterpiece Comic Book Theater. I hope you enjoy that performance of Maintenance by Jim Massey and Robbie Rodriguez. I think our actors, Sam Riedel and Michael John Gilbert, and that was me, Alex City, as well performing. And now, back to our main podcast. So I guess now for a quick review, because I think we've been recording for a while, of Identity Crisis. This is our 10th comic that we actually, I guess 11th really, but officially it's our 10th comic that we were reviewing. And it's written by Brad Meltzer, art by Rag Morales and Michael Baer, right?
Assistant edited by Valerie D'Orazio. Yeah.
And So you personally know someone who has worked on this, although it's, she didn't write this, so I think we can, you know, it's not that big of a deal, really.
Well, I have mixed feelings about that.
Yeah. Christ. And we all do, so, I'm just putting that, Val did not write this, and anything that does she write, I think, will be fantastic when it does come out.
Which is to say, what? That this is, Identity Crisis is not fantastic?
There are some mixed things.
I mean, there were things I liked, and then there were things that were much to be desired.
Yeah, I think for me, I definitely enjoyed the narration. I think was fantastic. As a fan of the old time radio dramas that we have mentioned, I think it was kind of great to have sort of these mixed sort of narrations. First from Plastic Man, it was a dark and stormy night, except that wasn't really what it was. It was much better written.
One of the few things I liked about Identity Crisis was a small aspect. They showed a little more of the humanity between all of them. That they're all real, they all have their human sides where they start, you know, suspecting each other and getting upset at each other. That was a little something. I was like, okay, I haven't seen this, and I haven't seen enough of this. And another thing, just a little more thing. I am a fan of Slade / Deathstroke, so it was nice to see him shine a bit in this, as you know, he lays waste to them for a little bit. And that was something I enjoyed. Other than that, it felt like trying to do too much in so little space.
So, Sam, what were your initial thoughts?
I love Rags Morales' pencil work on this book.
Oh, absolutely! I agree.
There's some in the trade, and this is another thing that I like. In the trade edition, there's commentary in the back with Meltzer and Morales' whole thoughts and comments on the book as it goes along. And
I think actually that is definitely something that should be pointed out as this is definitely a reason why you should get a trade instead of like trying to get the back issues.
Some of it you can find in an old back issue of Wizard. I know I bought that issue, but there's a lot more of it in the trade. But there's at the funeral scene, for Sue Dibney, the elongated man is like, he's trying to speak, but he has to hold his face together because it's melting because he can't control his face. And that's the sort of detail that in the hands of another artist might,
have become a little comical.
Come across as hyperbolic or unnecessary.
Rags manages to keep it together. I thought very well throughout the.
Yeah, it shows. Yeah, it shows his humanity. He's like, you know, he can't. He's so built up with emotion, he can't control his power.
Yeah. And he manages to capture extremes of emotion and just normal emotion on his character's face. It's not that everybody feels very strongly about everything. Sometimes something is just kind of pleasant, and I appreciate that that level of detail.
And actually, I think there's something that should be talked about. The fact that there is this thing that happened in the book. Do you want to just describe what actually happened, David? I think you had a lot of thoughts on this, right?
Yeah. Well, there are a couple things. My biggest problem is the... aside from the rape, which I thought was totally inappropriate for a book that has the Super Friends in it.
Yeah. This is your Saturday morning cartoon.
Right. Essentially, I mean, I get that, but I mean, like, wow. Way to really, really, really tarnish the reputation of these characters for somebody who's picking this up. If a six-year-old kid had picked up this book, oh my god.
Yeah, there, I've heard some really funny stories of parents watching for their kid before they took them to the movie.
Right.
And that's like, you really, it's a shame there aren't some rating systems nowadays at least where it's just like, don't buy this ever for a fucking kid.
Right. But also, I live in New York, okay?
Yeah.
Rape is pretty commonplace around here, you know, as is murder in Central Park, people getting stabbed on the subway, and I think sexually based crimes, certainly that's something more for Law & Order SVU than it is for My Super Friends.
Yeah.
You know, and or the Justice League. I mean, they had a cartoon when this show came on, and I just don't think the
thing that happens is that this is happening to, like, Sue Dibney, who's like one of really the nicest people in the Justice League universe.
Right. You know, it's like you don't want to really hurt someone like that. Really?
Yeah.
Come on.
But yeah, so I had a problem with that, definitely. And I know Valerie can attest to how gruesome it was when the rape pages came in for Identity Crisis. Was that a fun event, Val?
It was certainly interesting.
I guess
you can get Val on if we wanted to as well.
Yeah. So I mean, speaking as someone who, assistant edited the series, she said it was certainly an interesting experience. She's nodding.
Yeah.
But I mean, so I had a problem with that, but I also had a huge problem with the way the mystery unfolded. I mean, Jason Todd's dad dying, or not Jason Todd, Tim Drake's dad dying, which I thought really didn't make sense in the context of the story, you know, in terms of like, oh, and there's this another speedster dude who's got boomerang powers, and it was really just, Firestorm blowing up and all that other crazy ass shit. I didn't think I think it complicated a murder mystery, and then I think the murder mystery was further sort of untangled when you're like, oh, there's tiny footsteps on somebody's brain.
Yeah, let's not spoil too much of it, but there definitely was this humongous red head.
That was all, what? Ugh.
But yeah, I mean, I'm not saying anything other than, you know, like, yeah, it just doesn't make a lot of sense. It doesn't make a lot of sense. Who the murderer is doesn't make a lot of sense.
And then
the story
doesn't... Really, out of nowhere? Like, there should have been a little more, at least, kind of people that kind of go crazy. It's a little more kind of realized than this.
Yeah, it's totally really bizarre. hold on for a second.
Okay.
Holding.
Yeah, Steve Ellis, who lives two blocks away, wants to know if he can come over and get some reference material. And I was like, yes, but I'm in the middle of a podcast.
And then your nephew called up to ask, what happened?
Yeah, exactly. What happened? What happened? I'll go check.
You do that, nephew. You do that.
Yeah. Yeah, so... But yeah, for the most part, I just don't think the mystery works, and that to me is really disappointing.
I'm trying to remember how many issues this actually was. It's a pretty.
I think it was six.
Six issues.
Yeah, it was six.
And it's sort of like.
No, actually, it says seven. According to Wikipedia, it says seven. I don't remember seven, but I could be wrong.
And it's one of those things where it's just like, altogether, I mean, it is one of those, like, it is really odd, and I'm trying to think, like, how this would have been if you had read this actually kind of separately, all seven issues. Yeah, let's say one through seven.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Would this been, like kind of this long, overdrawn thing, where it's like, well, maybe now it is, like, This is kind of scary. Like, what could happen? Who is this person?
Right. It just ended awkwardly to me. And
It did have an awkward ending, and it was kind of like, I think it's, I gotta say, like, we have talked about event comics before, but we never talked about a DC event comic.
Right.
And, like, this was sort of their attempt at another crisis. Like, this is definitely a crisis on a smaller scale.
Mm-hmm. It's a weird amalgamation of the event comic and the murder mystery, and it works in some ways, but I don't know. I don't think you can really add in stuff like you were saying, David, about Firestorm blowing up and finding out that Captain Boomerang's son has speed and all this business, and making the Atom disappear forever, and then like. Building that up as a new part of world-shaking DC continuity, that only muddles the point that right. you're trying to make. I think actually I would go so far as to say that if those sort of extraneous plot developments in order to make a new series or some new continuity after Identity Crisis, if those plot points had been really cut out and everything else remained the same, I think what we would have seen is a more cohesive, or a seemingly more cohesive murder mystery that would have been more satisfying in general.
And that's exactly it. Is I think that when you worry too much about the little fan nods, you take away from the core crux of the story, which is what is this story about? And at the end of the day, Identity Crisis isn't a compelling story. It's not a compelling mystery, and I think a lot of people might like it, but they like it for those fan nods. Oh my goodness, that's really cool. Deathstroke just stabbed the Flash.
That was probably one of my favorite little spots right there.
Hey, that would never happen. The Flash moves at the speed of light.
Yeah.
Okay, the Flash moves at the speed of light. The amount of time it would take somebody to undraw their sword and kill them.
It's not possible.
Yeah, Deathstroke would already be dead.
it's just ridiculous. I'm like, he's just like, oh, I'm just gonna put my sword like this and hope the Flash runs into it. Oh, would you look at that? He did.
Yeah. But that is what makes Identity Crisis, because it's a fan thing. That's not plausible story. Anything.
And I think it's interesting that this is supposed to, like, that it is sort of like this fan shout-out.
It goes against superhero physics.
Yeah. It not only goes against superhero physics, it goes against real-life knowledge and a compelling story structure. And anything that makes this, I mean, that's a cheat. At the end of the day, that's a cheat. That's a story cheat. The Flash would easily kick Deathstroke's ass.
Yeah, quite
easily.
But for the convenience of the story, Deathstroke had to get away.
Mm-hmm. And I think the interesting thing is that you mentioned that this, like, a lot of, like, these are sort of, like, things for the fans. And it's, like, sort of like this event comic, and it's written by the celebrity writer, Brad Meltzer.
Right.
Who is more known for his, kind of action, like, sort of, like, his novels.
Right.
His thriller stuff in particular, yeah.
Yeah. And I think
but
it is
he got on.
He got on what?
He got on the book because, of his status in the fiction world, and also because he's... he's been a comics fan for a while, so he was able to do that. I like what because this kind of gets off the review of the book, but I like what happened because he wrote Identity Crisis. He got put on Justice League of America for a while, and he got to write The Tornado's Path, which I bought as it came out religiously, and I was a big fan. I thought that was a
That was a really good superhero story. But
kind of coming to actually read this before story.
Getting to read what got him there is, I don't know. If I had my way at that point, I'm not sure if I would particularly want to get any.
And I think that's definitely an interesting thing to think about. It's just like, oh, the first kind of thing that my, like, one of my favorite writers of this, I'm not saying he's your favorite, but I enjoyed his later stuff. It's kind of funny that I really didn't enjoy this first thing. I actually kind of want to read what you read now to sort of see what I think of it.
Hmm.
And, but yeah, I mean, well, I guess that's, it's, I guess we had our first negative review, I think, really. Was this our first?
Well, this is, like, I guess it's more of an overwhelming negative review, because we've had our, like, mixed opinions about certain things. I guess this one we all kind of, as a group, think, okay, this is not what we wanted it to be.
Right. Yeah. Well, yeah, it doesn't cast DC in a healthy light, and I get it. It kind of wanted to be Watchmen, essentially, was a murder mystery.
Watchmen.
You compare this to Watchmen, okay, so Watchmen is a murder mystery. And maybe it's unfair to compare Alan Moore and Brad Meltzer, but at the same time...
Because Alan Moore is a wizard.
Right. But at the end of the day, both are murder mysteries. And one is a much more compelling murder mystery than the other.
Mm-hmm.
Because Alan Moore didn't have fan nods. He worried about telling a good story.
Mm-hmm.
That's what
I don't think if he did, I don't think he would care.
And I think it was a little like if the fan nods were nods at all, they're too obscure for even most people.
Right.
Yeah. It's like they tried to do too much with something. They tried to make it something. I know. I respect what they tried to do, but I was just disappointed in it because. I know Alex knows that I had wanted to read it for a while.
Yeah, and it was really funny when you did ask me. It was just like, because I was just like,
I did want to read it, but after I read it, I'm like, oh.
Exactly. Because I sort of saw that happening. It was like, oh, that's really not what I kind of want to have to, make us review. But, this was, I guess that's appropriate for our 10th episode that we finally have our first all-around negative review. I mean, there was...
A milestone!
I think it started off good. It started off great for me. I loved kind of the first sort of first issue or so when it kind of is just Plastic Man.
Not just because I didn't overall like it doesn't mean I didn't like certain parts. Like there were parts I did like. Just overall, I wanted more. I wanted something more out of it, and it didn't give me any.
Right.
Meltzer's a pretty good scripter. I'll give him that. Not so much plotter.
Yeah,
right.
I think if it was Identity Crisis was just Plastic Man on the stoop for me, with the binoculars, I think that would have been a fantastic comic, and I would have enjoyed it.
Plastic Man is the voyeur of DC Universe.
Yeah, he's the private eye.
Well, in some regards, so is Batman. He's pretty much a voyeur.
Yeah, there's a Jurassic voyeur.
Yeah, he's cosplayer.
Yeah,
Batman cosplay.
Well, I guess that's a review for the week. Any more messages?
I guess we could do what we usually do, like thumbs up, thumbs sideways, thumbs down. I'm gonna have to give Identity Crisis a thumbs down.
Yeah, for what I've read so far, kind of what we have been reviewing, this is definitely a thumbs down.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan. Thumbs down.
Yeah,
I'm going to overall. Thumbs down. Artists, take a leaf out of Rags Morales' book, but no, this is a thumbs down overall.
I do want to actually, just because kind of Valerie, assistant editor for this, is in the other room of David's place, I think. I just definitely do want to kind of say, if there is something that you do want to read of Valerie's that Valerie has worked on, I personally loved Life in Arkham, Living Hell.
That's actually a really good trade paperback.
And I think it's
Arkham Asylum, Living Hell. Yes,
Dan Slott, and I think it's a fantastic actual kind of. I want because I feel like I read that. It's like that is something that I liked a lot. That is a.
I will find that in my local comic shop and take a look at it.
David, do you know the plot well enough to actually describe it?
It essentially follows one inmate in Arkham Asylum. From his first day to maybe his last,
And I think the interesting thing, it was described to me a while ago as the best thing that he does in this is actually create these really organic villains that you don't see before normally.
Yes.
And I think it's great. Like, some of my favorite villains are actually sort of like, some of my favorite villains that I've never ever seen before are in this, series.
Like Humpty Dumpty.
Yeah, Humpty Dumpty was fantastic. It's like, what the fuck?
Whoa.
Yeah, no, he's there.
And it's great because he actually sings the whole time in the comic.
It's really cool.
Are you kidding me?
Nope.
I have to find this now.
Yeah. So Arkham Asylum, Life is Hell.
Living Hell.
Living Hell. Pick that up if you want something better from that's like Valerie has assistant edited on.
Yes. Editor on that.
She was. Oh, even better.
She built as editor. So, yeah, she worked on a bunch of Justice Leagues for the Obsidian Age, but she was actually the editor in full on Arkham Asylum Living Hell.
And I honestly, that was a great trade.
There's another book Valerie worked on, too, by Darwin Cook called New Frontier.
Worked on that?
Yeah, I don't know if you guys
really
seen it at all. Yeah.
Yeah, that's it's kind of well known now because they had that the movie of it now.
Yeah.
So
yeah, Darwin Cook, some good stuff.
Yeah, so New Frontier and Arkham Asylum, Living Hell. Pick those two up if you want to see something much better that Valerie has worked on.
Yes.
Good.
So
I don't want to be too negative because it is someone up. It's a friend of the show. It is that awkward. It's much better these things. So.
Well, no, and I think it's cool. I think people will really enjoy it. So, and then she's got some other stuff coming down the line that I can't talk about yet.
Yeah, because they're hidden via cloak.
It's a secret.
Yes, it comes out pre anything else she's working on.
Will it be coming out soon? Because I remember, when I was talking to her, when I first met you and her together, she was showing me some of this, and it was estimated that it was actually going to be coming out this summer, wasn't it?
Well, I think originally it was October, but I think that has changed a little bit since they are making an appearance in X-Men.
Oh.
But she's got something out that comes out before that that supersedes it.
Okay. So that is the tip, I guess. That's the only little tip for people listening.
Yes, that's the only hint.
That's a hint. So take that as you will, and... that's all for this week. Any last words? Do you want to finish promoting, reminding people of anything that they should check you out in, David?
Yeah, I've got High Moon, which runs weekly. It's right now. It's on hiatus.
So issue 82, 182. That was the last page.
For now,
okay.
I can't say anything else.
Yeah, okay.
But High Moon trade paperback comes out on October the 13th. It's already been solicited in previews. You can check it out there. You can also order it on Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com. And you can read it for free online at HighMoonComic.com or ZutaComic.com/high.
This won't be available when you go to San Diego Comic-Con, will it?
We might have a preview available.
You might have a preview. Okay. That's a shame that you won't be able to be at a con to actually...
I think we're going to the Long Beach show where we'll actually promote it.
Long Beach? Cool. Where's that?
It's in Long Beach, California.
Oh, okay. Cool.
So, yeah, so it'll be a good time. It'll be very exciting.
So we'll have to have Audrey, when she is there, interview you or talk to you at least, get a photo.
Sounds great. I think it'll be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
So, and then Steve Ellis, who draws High Moon, has the Mighty USA Comics featuring Mighty Destroyer. Comes out in, I believe, a week or two. So
it comes out next week, actually.
Yeah, so definitely make sure you guys pick it up.
Yeah, I will definitely pick it up. We'll talk about it next week.
All right. Thanks a lot, guys, for having me on the show.
Thanks a lot.
And thank you
for
coming on.
Yeah,
no problem,
so just to sign ourselves off, David, you want to say goodbye first?
All right, guys. This is David Gallagher saying so long. See you later, alligator.
This is Alex Erdy, my mild-mannered photographer, saying I have an iPhone.
This is mild-mannered thespian Mike Gilbert saying I love the Green Goblin.
And this is Sam Riedel, the mild-mannered man on the street, saying, Auf Wiedersehen, goodbye. And we will see you here next time on the Mild-Mannered Podcast.
It's entertaining.
Yeah, I'd imagine. Someone's being murdered, apparently. On a special episode of the podcast. Host your own murder mystery podcast tonight.
Mild Mannered Podcast, episode 10. We kill people.
Okay. Yeah, my nephew had been calling all day.
Yeah, 25-month-old nephew?
Yes.
That's adorable.
yeah, only he, there's only a few things he can say.
What can he say right now?
He can say, "What happened?" and then better yet, he'll say it again. "What happened?" And then, after he says it twice, he says, "Let me go check."
I think your 25-month-old nephew is like growing up to become a news reporter pretty fast.
Yeah, it was very. It's
what
very
happened? Let me check.
Yeah, and then he'll come back.
Yeah, that.
A few minutes later, or a few seconds later, be like, "What happened? What happened? Let me go check." He's like a Muppet.
I imagine that would be kind of distressing the first couple of times that happens. You just get a phone call. "What happened?
I don't know what happened. Tell me."
"I don't know. Is everything okay?"
It's very interesting. Yeah, so he's been calling like a wild Comanche. It's awesome.
No, it wasn't as tiresome, but my coworker had a seizure, so.
Whoa.
Yeah, that was at a half hour into work. So,
oh god,
so yeah, I have to keep up with the shift now. Jeez.
Yeah, and I lost my Saturday off this week because he's gonna be out. But whatever.
That's your kitty.
It's my kitty.
Aww.
Yay, kitty.
Whoa, what's up, pussycat? Whoa. What's up, pussycat? Whoa. That's That's sort of Joey from Friends sang that song. You know, there's this thing you can actually compete in the world clicking championship.
Oh, really?
No.
Basically, you just click on a button and you're like, "Oh, you got 50 clicks. You are a click on a, you know, kind of a goofy little website." I was very happy. I was playing it. Like, it was great because they described it as just some great preparation for Diablo 3 when it comes out. Because that's what it is. It's just like, oh, man, my finger is not needs to work out a little more.
We actually, I left four of those coolers out on the by the side of the road for a week, and then somebody just drove up and took them away.
Was he working with the government? Was this a government job, or was it just a, I guess they...
Just a shady character.
Was it just a styrofoam? Was it just a styrofoam hobbyist?
He was a styrofoam enthusiast, I would say.
Okay, not a hobby. Okay,
between a hobbyist and a fanboy.
Are you competing in now, Mike?
What?
Someone's playing now.
Oh Lord! All right, you know what? I'm going to try this. Why the?
I got 60.
63.
Oh shit, really?
Yeah.
Nice.
And that was with 1 second realizing that it started.
Yeah.
OMG.
Oh man, I got 64 this time. Woo! It's a good workout. What'd you get, Sam?
57.
Yeah, work on it. It's just,
I need a better surface. That's my excuse.
Should I say welcome to...
Yes, you can. We'll introduce ourselves.
Okay.